Okay, fine. Chesed, I hope you're well. I hope everything's good. Now, so let us see. We are the Sedra this week. Let's just see what it is. So I'm going to open here. Right. Now, in the Sedra this week, the Sedra here is, Sedra now is called Balak. And it's about Balak, who is the king of Moab. And he tried to hire a heathen prophet called Balaam or Bilam to curse the people, the Jewish people. And the point was that every time he tried to curse them, a blessing came out of his mouth instead. And so this is one of the blessings. Mi mana afa Yaakov. Who can count the dust of Jacob? Umispar et rova Yisrael, and give a number. See, it's really in a way the same thing. Who can give a number? Two, now here, rova, one way of understanding the word rova is like a quarter. Who can give a number to a quarter of Israel? Kamot nafshi mot yesharim. Let my soul die the death of the straight ones, of the upright. Utihi achariti kamo, and let my end be like theirs. So that's actually a very nice bilam, a very nice blessing. And Balak got extremely annoyed, and he said to Bilam, Vayomer Balak for Bilam ma'asita li, what have you done to me? Balak said to them, I took you to curse my enemies, and you've blessed them instead of that. So so this is the verse that the discourse begins on. So we'll have the melody of the discourse. Let's just see if I can find it. Okay, so it stops a bit abruptly, but there we have the melody of the discourse, and we are going to look at the discourse. Right, are you able to see the discourse now, the Hebrew discourse? Yeah? Okay, lovely. Hi, Nicole, it's lovely seeing you, and Eleanor. Right. Maybe we can make it bigger. Okay. So there we have this same verse that we looked at a minute ago. So this was said on the 12th of Tammuz of 1958. And so today is the 13th of Tammuz. Now the 12th of Tammuz and the 13th of Tammuz are very significant days because in 1927, the previous Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, had been fighting a tremendous battle to keep Judaism alive in Soviet Russia. And the force of communism, which involved many Jews who were trying to destroy Judaism, unfortunately. The Yesvektsia was the Jewish branch of the Communist Party. And they were ruthless in looking for rabbis, getting them executed, sent into exile, in order, what they thought was a wonderful thing, that Judaism as a religion should disappear and there should just be communism. So that was the situation then, and Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak was struggling with all his might to keep Judaism alive. And at one point he took a map of Russia. This is around 1920-21. He took a map of Russia and he said, I'm dividing up this map into 10 parts. And I want 10 Hasidim to step forward and say that they're going to take responsibility for Jewish life in each of these sections of Russia. And 10 people stepped forward. One of them, I had the great merit that I knew him and was very inspired by him. He lived in England. He was the person who set up Lubavitch in England later on in his career, which he achieved many different things, including beginning to get the Rebbe's teachings printed in books, which was a wonderful thing. He was a very remarkable man called Rabbi Benzion Shem Tov, Alav HaShalom. His yard site was last week. So he was a very remarkable person. He was one of these 10 Hasidim, and he was in charge of a whole chunk of Russia, running secret chadorim for children, all kinds of things. And eventually in 1927, they arrested the previous Rebbe because they could see he was behind all this activism of keeping Judaism alive, and they wanted to execute him. And then it was commuted to exile, and he was sent into exile on a train to a distant city called Kostroma. And then on the 12th of Tammuz, they told him he's going to be freed. He's not actually going to be in exile. He was going to be 3 years in exile, but he was going to be freed instead. And it took a day for the actual process to get organized. And so today, the 13th of Tammuz, he was actually freed, and he left Russia, and he went to Riga, and then he went to Poland, and then eventually he went to New York and transferred the center of the Chabad movement to New York, which was a very crucial thing. So that's very special. And one of the points about this experience of the previous Rebbe is that it led to the global nature of the Chabad movement today. That there was the previous Rebbe in Russia, and then there were all the things he went through there, and then he left Russia and eventually came to America. And then from America, where it was a free country and Jews were able to live openly, and he was able to, even though there was the infinite tragedy of the Holocaust in the middle in the 1940s, but nonetheless, of which many of his own followers and relatives, his daughter passed away in the Holocaust, one of his three daughters. Together with his son-in-law, the next Rebbe, our Rebbe, Rebbe Menachem Mendelsohn, the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe, created the concept of uforatzta, of spreading over the whole world, basically, and finding Jews wherever they are. They might be in a big community, might be in a little community, might be just one individual living somewhere, to try and have some kind of contact, some kind of relationship, try to help them in some way. And that's... Now, this discourse talks about, in a subtle way, it talks about the quality of the Jewish people as the Jewish people who are going to spread over the world. And in fact, if we go back to this first line, Mi mana afa Yaakov, who counts the dust of Jacob, Umispar, and gives a number as Rova. Now, I translated Rova as quarter. Yeah. Who can give a number to a quarter of Israel? But another way of understanding the word Rova, it simply means four, and it's the four directions, north, south, east, west. Because the concept of Israel, of the Jewish people, Jacob or Israel, like they're these two names, which the Jewish people have. And it is with the person of Jacob in the Torah that God tells Jacob, he hadn't told that to anyone else before, not Abraham, not Isaac, you will burst forth, uforatzta, yomov akedmo, you will burst forth to the west, to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And that's an incredible thing. And so this discourse is really about the beginning of that whole process in spiritual terms. Now, who counts the dust of Jacob and numbers the quarter of Israel, or this fourfold Israel? And before that, it said a verse. We should have looked at together, but it doesn't matter. Actually, we could maybe still do that. Well, it's here, so we'll just take it here. Hein am levadad yishkon, behold a nation which lives alone, dwells alone. Uvagoyim lo yitchashav, and it's not counted among the nations. Now, this verse is interpreted in many different ways, and one way of understanding it is the tremendous isolation that the Jewish people are always in. They're somehow always alone. And now Israel, the Jewish country, is also always alone. People can do the most terrible attacks on Israel, no one cares. And if Israel tries to defend itself in some way, then everyone is up in arms against Israel. So this sense of the Jewish people being alone. But the Rebbe gives a different interpretation of this verse. The Kai ala Geula Atida, that's talking about the future redemption, which hopefully will come very soon through Mashiach Tzidkenu, through Mashiach.
Oh my.
And about that time, it says, who counts the dust of Jacob and gives a number to a quarter of Israel? Because there was something a bit like this at the time that the discourse was said, at the time when the verse was said, that means the time of Jacob, that you have Jacob and you have his children, but it's not like the dust of the earth. But in the future, when Mashiach comes, then it'll be in a more complete way. So then there will really be large numbers of Jews. Many Jews, many people are actually Jewish. They don't realize they're Jewish because the female line has like come down through the generations into certain people. I found in University College many years ago, it was in the rare book section of the University College library. And they had a book, a handwritten book. It wasn't printed. It was a handwritten book written around the year 1890, something like that. And it was a list of Jewish children who had been put in Christian orphanages. Like there were lots of poor Jews who came to England in the 1890s, between 1880 and 1920. And in many cases, the family wasn't able to look after the children, unfortunately, and the Jewish community itself was not very organized. And there were children who were sent to Christian orphanages. It was a list of children. The whole book was like a list of names. And just think what happened to those children. Did they know they were Jewish when they grew up? What happened to them? Now all the girls, they carry this Jewish dimension in them that their babies are Jewish. And if it's a girl baby, then her babies are Jewish. And so it goes on. So there might be just from that book of a few hundreds Jewish children who were put in Christian orphanages, there might be thousands of people in England who are actually Jewish and who don't realize it. It's or more, just from that one book. So therefore, it is at that time that the idea of the dust of Jacob, that the Jews will be as plentiful as the dust. So that's really something about the future time. Now, it asks a question here. Normally, you'd see we've got Jacob. Now, if we remember, let's go back and remember the story of Jacob. Jacob and Esau were twins in the womb of their mother, Rebecca. And they were always struggling somehow. It was a terrible pregnancy, like unfortunately sometimes happens. The person has a difficult pregnancy, and especially with these twins, and the sages say they were fighting together. And then Esau was born first, and then came Jacob. And in a mysterious way, Jacob was holding on to the heel of Esau, as if he was trying to be first. And so Jacob was called Jacob because the word okay in his name means heel. You see, we got this word Yaakov, if I can show you here. So ayin kuf base, okay, means heel. And then there's a yud added. And so the name Jacob somehow means the person who's second best, the person who's trying to get ahead but can't. And it's the big, powerful Esau who is ahead of him. And even though Jacob bought the birthright from Esau, and then he was given the blessings by his father, but there's always this threat of Esau hanging over him. However, before Jacob was going to meet Esau after many years of separation, there was an amazing vision that he had, or it was a waking vision, in which he wrestled with a man. And the sages tell us this man was the angel of Esau. And he was, in a certain sense, stronger than this angel. And the angel says, I'm going to change your name. I'm going to give you another name because you are someone who has struggled with angels and with people and you've succeeded. So your name will be Yisrael, Israel. And that's how we get the name Israel. And it's the same person, Jacob and Israel. So the question that the Rebbe asks is, if we're talking about the greatness of the Jewish people in the future, when they're all like the dust of the earth, which means there are millions and millions of them, and they're powerful and they're strong and no one is causing any problems to them, it's the time of Mashiach, which at the very least, there are all kinds of different ways of understanding what the time of Mashiach is, but the very least dimension is the least level of talking about Mashiach is that at a time the Jewish people will be completely free. So if so, why is the name Jacob used instead of the name Israel? And the answer to that question, which is sort of slowly spelled out in the discourse, is that Jacob manifests all kinds of fascinating dimensions. And Jacob is really the name of the Jewish people and the Jewish soul in the struggles that Jacob has. And those struggles, those are our struggles as individuals and as a people. And it's ultimately through those struggles that Mashiach will come and there will be peace in the world and everything good. But it's the story of the Jewish people. Jacob is the story of the Jewish people. The name Israel is like fulfillment. But the name Jacob is like the process of the struggle of life. Now let's just see. Okay. So now we're moving down the page to line 27. Now, in the blessings that the Jewish people were blessed as regards being many people, the Midrash says, you find that Abraham was blessed with stars. Your children will be, God said to him, look up to heaven and count the stars. Yitzchak was blessed as the sand of the sea. God says, I'm going to increase your children like the stars of heaven and like the sand on the edge of the sea. Jacob was blessed as the dust of the earth. And then it goes on. It says in the Midrash that God said to Jacob, when your children will be like the dust of the earth, at that moment, you know what's going to be? You will burst out to the west and to the east. And that is actually the end of the verse. Your children will be like the dust of the earth. And then you will spread out. You will burst out to the west and the east and the north and the south. Now about this concept of Faratzta, it says in the Midrash that that's what it says. The one who bursts through is arising before them. And that's talking about King Mashiach. And King Mashiach comes from another twin who was born. If we go, one of Jacob's sons was Judah, and Judah had a relationship with a woman called Tamar, and in the end, Tamar was originally his daughter-in-law, and then he had a relationship with her, which normally would be forbidden, but the point is he hadn't let her marry his third son. She'd married two of his sons, and both of them had died, because they'd done wrong things. And then Judah didn't want her to marry his third son. He was worried he would also die. And she made a whole thing pretending to be a harlot. And Judah came to her and she had twins. And one of those twins, so there was one baby. Here we have another account of birth. So one baby stuck his hand out of the womb, and the midwife tied a red thread round his hand, and then the hand got withdrawn inside again, and the other baby came out, and so the other baby like burst out. So they called him Peretz, which means bursting out. And then came the other one who had the red thread on his wrist. So two little boys. And Peretz was the ancestor of King David, and therefore the ancestor of Mashiach. So therefore, the whole idea of Mashiach relates to this Peretz, and Peretz means bursting out like Ufaratzta. And so when Mashiach comes, there will really be the full sense of Ufaratzta, Yomo v'Kedma v'Tzafonu v'Negba. And that means it's Dafka Jacob, who was blessed to be like the dust of the earth. About him, it says, Ufaratzta, you'll spread out, you'll burst out. And that's a greater thing even than the name Israel. And that's why this special verse with which we began the discourse, the verse from this week's Sedra, is about Jacob and not about Israel. Okay, so let's just stop for a minute, see if we understand what's going on. Now, I should have got it ready before, but there is a... melody, Ufaratzta. Let's just see if we can hear it. 1 second. So there we have this Ofarat Negun. Were you able to hear it all right?
Yep.
Yeah, it came through. I'm never sure with the Zoom how it works. So that's the Ofarat melody, and that relates to this discourse. So in other words, what we've learned so far is that the blessing that Bilam, this heathen prophet who tried to curse the Jews, but in the end he blessed them against his will, and the blessing he gave, it's like a tremendous blessing. The Jews are going to be so great. And he uses the name Jacob instead of Israel. And that's a question. And the Rebbe answers the question by explaining that it's about the name Jacob that you've got the real concept of Ofarat stuff spreading around the world. And this blessing was that the Jewish people should be like dust, which means millions and millions spreading around the world. And so that's why it uses the name Jacob. Okay. Any questions or comments at this point? Yeah, everything is clear?
That's amazing.
Sorry?
That's amazing. I love it. It's incredible. I've never heard that before. And the melody is great.
Yeah.
I guess the Faratz is multidimensional because, you know, once he becomes Israel, he then has two wives, and then obviously, he has two wives and then the sons of the 12 tribes. So it's like that was a form of a Faratz.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, Jacob becomes the 12 tribes of Jacob, and they spread out in the land of Israel. You've got the different parts of the land of Israel where these 12 tribes are located.
As soon as he gave birth to our forefathers, that was the beginning of the Parat.
Well, that's the beginning.
And then Joseph took it to the next stage when he went off to Egypt, and then et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, well, I mean, that's the complicated history of the Jewish people. I mean, the Holocaust was the most horrific, horrific thing. But one of the effects of the Holocaust is that the Jewish people are now scattered around the world. In almost every single country, there is a little community of Jews or a big community of Jews. And that is itself an incredible thing, that Judaism is a global phenomenon, as well as, of course, being centered in the land of Israel, the Holy Land of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's go on with the discourse. If I can do this right. Yeah, okay. So now in chapter Bet of this discourse, the Yuvan will understand this more, behektim considering Masha Klal Yisrael Nikra B'Shem Yaakov Yisrael. The fact that the whole Jewish people are called Jacob in Israel, even though there's only the three patriarchs, Abram, Isaac, and Jacob. Nonetheless, Abram and Isaac, they are the names of the patriarchs. Whereas when we say Israel or Jacob and Israel, that is the Jewish people. Yeah, we don't say the people is called Abraham or the people is called Isaac, but the people are called Israel and sometimes Jacob in the verse. So like we have in this verse here, where in fact both names are used. Who counted the dust? Who can count the dust of Jacob or the quarter of Israel? Now, in simple terms, this means that Abraham, although he is tremendously, tremendously great, and his son Isaac is the ancestor, he is the ancestor of the Jewish people. Isaac's the ancestor. But Abraham also had a son, Ishmael. And Isaac also had a son, Esau. Only Jacob is the one, it uses the phrase in Hebrew, mitato shlema, his bed was whole. All his children are part of the Jewish people. You see, before, Ishmael is not part of the Jewish people. Esau is not part of the Jewish people. Now, all the children of Jacob, it could be that some of them did some very terrible things. They took their brother, they sold him, they did awful things, and they felt very guilty about that for many, many years. But nonetheless, they're part of the Jewish people. They're all together. It doesn't say that one of them went off and disappeared among the nations and was forgotten about. Judah was very upset with himself, why he'd let Joseph be sold. And the whole story, how he went away, and there was this girl, Tamar, who married his son, and then the other son, and both sons died. That's all in a kind of expression of Judah being in a sort of self-imposed exile, because he's so upset with himself at selling Joseph, or letting the others sell Joseph. But eventually, he comes back into the whole group, and they all go down together to Egypt. And then Joseph reveals himself to them, and then the whole family is reunited in Egypt with Jacob, their father, and all his sons, and Joseph as well, and his son. So that's what it means, that Jacob, he is really the Jewish people. That is the Jewish people. Whether we call him Jacob or Israel, that's the Jewish people. That's why the land of Israel is called the land of Israel. However, the Pashtut HaInyan, the simple, the sort of literal way of understanding, is that Jacob also refers to the inwardness of the Jewish people. The inwardness of this is that Jacob and Israel are the names of the neshama, the names of the soul. Such a beautiful, powerful statement. Jacob and Israel are the names of the soul. Now, even though it's explained elsewhere that within each individual Jew, man and woman, we've got the three patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that's why the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, are called the patriarchs of Avos, the fathers of each one of us. While the other tribes, Judah, Levi, Joseph, they're not necessarily our parents, right? So thank God I'm a Levi, so I trace my lineage back to Levi, the son of Jacob. And if there was a Kohen, he could also trace his lineage back to Levi, the son of Jacob. And there's some people who know that they're descended from certain very famous rabbis, who come from the Judah, who are descendants of Judah, like Rabbi Lu. Rabbi Lu is a descendant of the Maharal of Prague, and the Maharal of Prague is, you go back far enough, is a descendant of Judah. But most people don't know that much about their lineage, but we're all descended from Jacob, and the people who become proselytes, they join the Jewish people at various points through our history. So, but they join, and the whole Jewish people, we have got this special affiliation with Jacob. And the name which particularly relates to the soul is the name Jacob, Yaakov. And since the soul achieves its service, battling with spiritual forces, angels, battling with people, and then it comes that it's not only called Jacob, it's called Israel. But it's basically the soul of each one of us. Each one of us has got that quality inside us. And from this we understand that when we speak about the greatness of the Jewish people in the future, in the time of Mashiach, let's skip the brackets, then it's these two names, Jacob and Israel, they're the important names. And since they're the names of the Neshama, we can understand that everything it says in the Torah concerning Jacob applies to the service of the soul in each individual man and woman of the Jewish people. Right? Now, that's a beautiful statement. Everything the Torah tells us about Jacob applies to every single one of us. It's our story. It's my story. And that's, you know, that each one of us here together, each one of you can say, it's my story. This is my story. Whatever it says about Jacob is your story. Yes, Jeff.
Oh, hello, good evening. Just wanted to ask you to go a bit deeper. The gematria of the name.
Look, Jeffrey, let's just keep on the way that the rabbits explained.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry to if I'm disturbed.
Yeah, just keep on the track that it's being spelled out. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, they're always like side streets, but let's just keep on the main road. Now, where do we have the beginning of the story of Jacob? What happens with Jacob? It's in the Sedra Vayetze. And that whole idea, we're going to look at that inside. In this Sedra Vayetze, right, which is in Genesis. So we've got Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Jacob goes out of Be'er Sheva, or Be'er Sheva, and he went to Haran. Now, Haran, it actually, in Hebrew, it means something problematic and difficult and violent. There's a word, Haran Af, anger. So Jacob went out of Be'er Sheva. Now, Be'er Sheva literally means the well of seven, or the well of the oath. He went out from a place called, because there's a well. There was a well there in Be'er Sheva. And he went out of that place and he went to Haran. And Haran is where his uncle Laban lives. And that's where he's going to be trying to marry Rachel. And then he gets cheated. So he marries Leah and then he marries Rachel as well. And he has lots of children there. That's all happening in Haran. And so he's on this journey. Now, remember, this is being explained as the journey of our souls, our soul making this journey. Vayivka b'makom, and he came to this place. Now, the word vayivka can sometimes mean he prayed. So the sages say he came to this place and he prayed there. And he rested there because the sun had set. And he took the stones of that place and he made them into a pillow for his head and he lay down in that place. Vayachalom, and he dreamt. And there was a ladder standing on the ground and its head was reaching the heavens. And angels of God were going up and down the ladder, right? Now that mystical dream that Jacob had. Now what the Rebbe is saying is that all this applies to us. We are the Jacob. We are going from Be'er Sheva, and we'll maybe see what that means. And we're going to Haran, and we'll try and see what that means. And we have this dream, which is telling us about the spiritual nature of reality, that there is a ladder joining earth and heaven, and there are the angels going up the ladder and the angels going down the ladder. One of the ways of understanding that is that the angels are the words of the prayers. The words of the prayers go up the ladder to the divine, to God, and then blessings come down the ladder from God to us. It's not discussed in the discourse, but that's one of the explanations. And then God says, "V'hine Hashem nitzav alav," and God was standing over him, and God said, "I am God, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you are lying, I am going to give it to you and to your children." In other words, he's telling him, "I will give you the land of Israel." And then it says, the verse we've been talking about, "V'haya zaracha ka'afa aretz," your children will be like the dust of the earth, "uforatzta yomo v'kedma v'tzafonu v'negva," and you will burst out to the west and the east and the north and the south. And then a very striking statement, "V'nivrachu v'cha," and there will be blessed through you, "kol mishpachot ha'adama," all families of the earth will be blessed through you, Jacob, "uvazarecha," and they will be blessed through your children. So this is an incredible blessing being given by God to Jacob. And the Rebbe has told us that everything that the Torah says about Jacob applies to every single one of us as an individual. And that's something really incredible. All right, let's go back to the discourse. One second, let's maybe see if, how are we all doing on that? Do we understand it?
I'm really interested in the question that Jeffrey had.
You know, a teaching is a journey. And, you know, it's like you're traveling somewhere, you know, so of course there are all kinds of other possible routes to take. But it's, you know, that's not what the discourse is teaching at this point. It might, you know, at some point, it might start talking about the gematrias, but...
I just thought it might be relevant. But one thing I wanted to add that I thought was kind of cute was I kept realizing how you were talking about Yaakov and the souls of the net of the, all of the yids of and in them being then later Israel, and obviously the journey of how that will happen. But then also you were saying about Yaakov is the heel of the soul. Did you get it? The heel of the soul, and he was carrying all of our souls. He was the heel of the Jewish nation's soul. Hence, he's then Israel.
Well, that's very sweet. I mean, you can add the other dimension, which is the Yud of his name. It's the Yud of the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. So it's the initial letter of God's name. And then the heel. Now the heel is like, in a sense, it's the lowest, coarsest part of the body. I remember when I was studying psychology in university, one of the very few things I learned was that the heel is so insensitive that if you took two pins or one pin and you prod someone's heel, imagine this is a person's heel and they're letting you do this to them, they can't see what you're doing, and you either prod with one pin or you prod with two pins, the heel can't tell the difference whether it's one or
two. I can vouch for this. Okay. I can see, yeah. No, I know that. I'm 8-9-year-old me knows that this is a fact.
Okay.
But no, that just.
So in other words, yeah. The heel is the lowest part. And it's nice what you say. Yeah, the heel of all the souls of the Jewish people. Yeah, that's very cute.
But without the heel, the body can't stand either.
Yes, that's very true. And in fact, the fact that the heel is so insensitive can sometimes be very useful. If you're going into a very hot bath, you dip your heel in, you know, to get an idea how hot it is.
Was Yaakov a bit insensitive and a little bit easy to prod without him realizing the pain?
I wouldn't say that, because you've also got the Yud. You've also got the yuds. You see, the point about Yaakov is that it goes all the way from the highest to the lowest. Mm. And that's really the nature of the individual, that it's something which takes from the highest to the lowest, coming all the way down.
Rebbe, Jeffrey again. So you can tell me not at the moment. Perhaps if Yaakov knew that the name of that place had a negative effect, why did he go there?
Because that's his task.
Ah, very good.
That's his task. That's the task of the soul. I mean, one way of understanding this is that Jacob goes out of some, the soul goes out of some beautiful place like Be'er Sheva, which is very spiritual.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it goes to Haran, to a place which has got a very negative atmosphere. Now that's like the world that we're living in. The soul goes into the world. We go into a world which is full of chaos, violence, war, different things, negativity of all kinds. It's got beautiful aspects as well, but it's all muddled up together. And so that is the Charon Av, and we have to go there and we have to try to improve things in some way.
Thank you.
Or at least retain our connection with the divine. At least not be swept away with everyone else. The Rambam says that if a person is living in a society where everyone is doing wrong things, the person has to try to make sure that they don't go with the flow. They stand back from it. And then he says, and what will happen if you're living in a place where everyone is forcing you to join them in doing these wrong things? Yeah, let's imagine we were at the time of the golden calf, and everyone is going to be dancing around the golden calf, and they say, come on, come on, you join us. So what do? We try to hold back. So the Rambam says, you know, putting it in the sort of more modern context, he says, if that's what's happening, go away from the other people. Go and live in a cave in the forest or something like that. In fact, considering that it's the 12th of Tammuz, 13th of Tammuz today, the pressure on the Jewish people in Russia was a pressure of education. Send your children to our schools, said the communists, and then we'll be able to cure them. They won't be stupid traditional Jews anymore. They'll become good communists. And they will report to us if they see their mother lighting Shabbat candles and their father doing something else Jewish, like teaching them some Torah, and we'll come and arrest them and send them to the gulag. And you will be okay, you'll be little communists and big communists. So that was the pressure on children and on families. It was against the law not to send your children to school. So there was a certain family of whom I'd met quite a number of them, including the father, where the father decided, you know what? We cannot risk sending our children to these communist schools. We're going to go and live in the forest. And he somehow went, him, his wife and his children, a whole bunch of children, and they somehow managed to live in the forest. So I knew certain of these children. Some of them have now passed away. I met the father several times. He's also passed away long ago. But there they were living to be secure. The whole thing about them living in the forest. I met a man who told me, who was also in Russia at that time, and he was a boy who was in school. And he described to me how one day his father took him to visit this family in the forest, and he described the whole thing to me. So that was, this is the struggle. I mean, there's struggles going on now as well with education. There's the schools built, which is trying to destroy the traditional education system, the Jewish education system in England. A friend of mine, a professor in University College, wrote an article against it in the Jewish Chronicle. You could read that article by Joe Mintz, Professor Joseph Mintz. So he wrote a very nice article against the school's bill, which hasn't yet been passed, but it's trying to stop the existence of a place like a yeshiva in England. It's real communism in a sense, you know, it's not allowing religious freedom. So we've also in Russia, there were problems, and there are problems here too. And there are also other problems with attempts to make little children in schools learn all kinds of things about sexuality, which are not appropriate for their age in terms of the way their parents understand things. And certain organizations are trying to force this onto our children as well. So these are problematic aspects of England in 2022. Okay, so let's go back into the discourse.
Thank you.
Now, now we've got an explanation. There's a great commentator called the Or HaChaim, who lived in Morocco, actually, Rabbi Chaim Ibn Nattar. And he says that what we learn about Jacob is actually every Jewish soul. When it comes down from above to below into this world, the descent is in order to rise, is in order to achieve positive things. And that's what it means that Jacob went out of Be'er Sheva, this sort of more spiritual place, Be'er Sheva, and he went to Choron, which is like a place full of anger, which is like the troubled world. And then he prayed at that place and he rested. Now comes two explanations from the Zohar about this verse in terms of the Sfirot, the divine emanations. One is that Jacob in the Sfirah is the concept of Chochmah, wisdom. And that's why the word Jacob begins with the letter Yud. That letter Yud, it means the Sfirah, the attribute wisdom, Chochmah. You see the divine name Yud and He and Vav and He, the Yud is Chochmah, the He is Bina, understanding. The Vav are the six emotions, kindness, severity, and so on. And then the last He is Malchut, is kingship. So the Yud is the letter representing Chochmah, wisdom, and that is the Yud of Jacob. And that is the beginning of the downchaining of existence. And therefore it's expressed in the letter Yud, which is just like a dot, which is completely contracted, very small. And that means that since God is one without number, beyond any kind of number, God is completely beyond the 10 divine emanations. So therefore, in order that there should be the 10 Sfirot, which are going to, as it were, pour spirituality into the world, and the beginning of the 10 Sfirot is wisdom. So that is through a concealment of the infinite divine radiance. And so the beginning of the revelation after the concealment is just a dot. And that dot is the letter Yud of the name Jacob. Now that's why the letter Yud is also the beginning of the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, the tetragrammaton. And the tetragrammaton is a kind of combination of the words Haya Hoveh V'Yiyeh, it was, it is, and it will be, right? So if you look at those three words, Haya, it was, Hoveh, it is, and Yiyeh, it will be, and you put them together, you can see how it makes the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. And through this, the whole of existence comes into being through the down chaining of worlds from the highest levels down. And that means through the Tzimtzum, which is hinted at in the letter Yud. So the Tzimtzum of the letter Yud is really the beginning of the whole of existence. Now, even though you've already got the Sfira, Chochmah, wisdom, you still have to have all the other Sfirot as well, and which they relate to the seven emotions. Now, God is completely beyond all these Sfirot, all these different dimensions. And so that's what it means that yet Jacob went out of Be'er Sheva. That according to this explanation in the Zohar, it's talking about the Be'er Sheva, the well of seven of the attribute Bina, understanding. And that is the well, that's the root of giving, bringing into existence the Sheva Hamidot, the seven emotions, like the seven Sfirot below. And the main goal is to go to Haran. And the Zohar explains that means flowing from this higher point within the Sfirot into the Sfira Malchut, kingship, the lowest Sfira. And that is the world of speech. And that is why, here we come to a gematria, Haran, what's the gematria of Haran? Can you tell me just those letters, Haran? No? The gematria of Haran. Mm-hmm. Well, Chet is 8, Resh is 200, Nun is 50, so that's 258. Now, there's an idea sometimes that when you count up a gematria, you add 1. So that's 259. Now the word Garon, Gimel is 3, Resh is 200, Vav is 6, and Nun is 50. So that's 259. And Garon means the throat. So the Haron, the place which is so difficult and problematic, is the throat from which one speaks. And one speaks, and when one speaks, the breath from the heart goes into what we say. And so we're talking about a process inside the person, that it comes from Bina, from understanding, or it starts at Chochmah, wisdom, and then Bina, understanding, and it comes out, the words that we say, which are filled with the energy of the heart. So that is the role of Jacob. Jacob going from this highest level into the lower level, which at this moment we're looking at it like it's within the world of Atzilut, within the world of emanation. It's very exalted. Now, we can also understand it in a different way, that the Haron means the physical world that we know, the world that's that is around us and that the newspapers write about and so on, the problematic world of the present. So that's another way of understanding it, that Jacob is the one who comes from this exalted level in order to be in the world. And it describes how this special role of Jacob, which is really the soul of each individual, that's something very significant. Now then we come to the second explanation in the Zohar. Now the second explanation in the Zohar is that when it says Jacob went out of Be'er Sheva and went to Haran, that means he went from kingship of Atzilut, right? In other words, where the first explanation ends, the second explanation begins. He went out from the realm of kingship of Atzilut to a world of separation, which is the world where there's a lot of impure things and low. Because the goal is that the flow, which we began talking about, the flow from the level of Yud, of wisdom, of Atzilut, of emanation, coming down into kingship of emanation, which is that all the way down the realm of Atzilut, that it should actually go down much, much lower than that. And so there it is, into this realm of impurity and negativity. And that's why it's called Charon. And there's a phrase, Nicha Groni, my throat is parched. That the voice and speech which are transmitted through the throat cannot be heard by the creatures below, because there's such a lot of concealment in the world and everything is hidden. And so now then we have another gematria, and that's why this word garon, which means the throat, in gematria is seven times the word hevel. Now the word hevel means nonsense, vanity. In the translation of the Bible it says vanity of vanities, everything is vanity. That's the word hevel. So it's something which is nothing, got no significance. And that word hevel, the numerical value, the gematria is 37. And 7 times 37 is, let's see what it is. Can you tell me what 7 times 37 is? Okay, very bad habit. Not doing it mentally, but 7 times 37 equals 259. Right. And 259 is garon. Right? We already established that. 259 is the throat. And so they are the 7 havalim of Kohelet in the book of Ecclesiastes, which begins off with King Solomon saying, vanity of vanities, everything is vanity. And from there, from that realm, which is a realm of negativity, we have these 7 emotional dimensions, kindness and severity and mercy and so on. And through that, we have the building of the world in a positive way. As it says, God says, I'm going to build the world with kindness. And these 7 breaths, they shine into the speech of a person. And that is like the voice which is speaking. And that's in a positive way when it's speaking. But when the voice is parched, when the throat is parched, then instead of the speech coming through, it becomes a realm of concealment. And that's the charonah, that's the anger. And so that's the whole idea of a world of separation.
Where Adam and Eve, Rebbe, came from the Garden of Eden, they came down to fix this world. Yankov is doing the same.
Yeah, in fact, each one of us is doing the same.
The whole, yeah. Thank you.
Now, this descent of going down into this difficult world is really for the sake of an ascent, for the sake of going higher. And that's why it says he came to this place, he prayed in this place. And it's not an ordinary place. This is the place which is actually the place of the world. I mean, in a deep way, that place was the site of the temple in a sort of complicated way. And he rested there because the sun had set. Now, so here we have this this idea that he's in a place where he is able to connect to God, if you remember, after having that dream of the ladder with the angels going up and down the ladder. Jacob wakes up and says, this is the gate of heaven. And from there comes the power that God is going to help him in all this difficulty. Not only won't he be lost in this descent into this problematic world, But on the contrary, he will come out with great wealth in a very positive spiritual way, meaning a spiritual wealth. So that really is the history of every individual. All right, so let's just see if we can stop and just make sure what is the history of every individual. Each one of us is the Jacob who goes out of Be'er Sheva and he goes down to the most remote place. And one way of understanding it, the first way that Zohar describes it, he goes to the realm of Malchut, of kingship, of the realm of Atzilut, the realm of emanation. And so that is a whole journey. That's an infinite journey. And then there's the second explanation, that he's going from Malchut, from kingship, into the broad world as a whole, which is filled with so many problems. And that's the second part of the story of Jacob. And so this really is the story of each one of our souls. So are we able to relate to this? I mean, are we able to, you know, each one of us, to look at our souls, so to speak, with our mind's eye? And think of it as having this task. Can you see yourself having this task of going from this very high spiritual place, going into a realm of difficulty and being here in the world? That's really, it's in this sense that this is our story. The story of Jacob is the story of each individual. Any comments on that?
I mean, going back to what I was saying to my analogy about Yaakov being the heel of the soul and soul being obviously the Jewish people and, we're like the heel. When Hashem said to Moshe that, I now want you to lead these people across the desert to the promised land, his response was like, are you kidding me? These people are stiff-necked. And, you were saying about how, a needle going through the heel, which I can vouch for, and the fact that, the body can't stand without the heel. I think that just amplifies kind of just, as you said, like the whole history of the Jewish nation, because when we're together, we make the whole body stand, and the body is obviously Torah, but we're very difficult to get through. And then when you do get through, we still don't feel it.
Yep.
Very good.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Very good, Ophir.
Okay, lovely.
Like it.
Now, let's have a look here in section 7. Explaining this in terms of the service of the individual. Because the whole service of a person is on the three lines of Torah, studying Torah. Avodah, which means prayer to God. And doing positive actions, milut chasadim. And it's on those three things the world stands. And that's also the olam katam, the small world, the microcosm, the individual human being. There's the line of prayer, which in the time of the temple, it meant the service of the offerings in the temple. And that's thought, our thoughts. Because when we offer up the offerings in the temple, there had to be the thought of the priest had to be in the right way, because it's very possible that a person has the wrong thought in their head when they offer up the offering, and that spoils the offering. And so the priest has to have the right thought. So when we're thinking about the offerings in the temple, it means thought. And also, after the temple was unfortunately destroyed, there's the idea of prayer. And the prayer corresponds to the bulls that we would offer up. So about the service of prayers, it says, you should serve the Lord your God. And the sages ask, what is the service in the heart? You should serve the Lord your God with all your heart, it says. It doesn't have the word heart here. but it's there. You should serve God with all your heart. Va'avadatem et Hashem elokeichem b'chol levavchem. You should serve God with all your heart. The sages ask, what is the service which is in the heart? That's prayer. And that means that prayer is really something happening in the thought. Yes, it's true, we say the words, but it's like the thought, the yearning of the heart in the thought. And that also hints, it's hinted at in the word tefillah, which the word tefillah means pray, and it can also mean if someone takes a piece of clay and joins it to the larger clay, like which is going round, this the clay thing is going round and round, the potter's wheel, and you take a piece of clay and you add it to it. And that's the idea of his kashrus, being bonded to God. Because the idea of his kashrus, of being bonded in a complete way, the inner bonding, is not through action. Person can do action and be thinking about something else. And it's even not through speech, because people also, they can say various things and not really mean them. But the his kashrus, of the bond of souls together, is mainly through the garment of thought. And then there's the line, so that is what is called avodah, the service of God. That's the line of thought. Then there's the line of Torah. And the main thing of Torah is saying the words of Torah. As it says, v'dibatam bom, you should speak of these words, speaking them. And as it says, that by saying the words of Torah out aloud, it brings life to the person. And so therefore, even when we say the blessing of the Torah, it is about the speech of Torah. And then finally, there's the line of gemilut chasadim, of doing good things, of giving charity, and of doing good things, which is really what all the mitzvot are about. And that is action. So there's prayer, which is like thought, and learning Torah, which is speech. And then there's all our positive activities, which are action. And the main service of the person is concerning prayer. Because as far as Torah goes, it's already been given. And the action is something which comes after the service of thought. And so that means that the main avodah of the person is in prayer. Because that's where we get the quality of thought. And that prayer is the ladder which is on the ground, the head of which reaches the heavens. As the Zohar says, the ladder means prayer. And it's through the ladder of prayer that the person reaches above, and everything the person has rise up together with the person. And the main prayer is the selflessness in the Amidah, when we say the Amidah prayer in a way of selflessness, which comes after Kriyat Shema, saying the Shema. And so we say the Shema, and then there's this sense of selflessness. And then in the Shema, we say you should love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. And before that, we say, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Now, so there it's now going into the whole service of the individual and the way in which we come to the service of love and that tremendous quality of love. You should love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. And so here it's speaking about that tremendous love which is there. And so the way that it is, this going out of Jacob, in terms of the service of the individual to God, is because the yud of Jacob, that means the root of the soul. And it goes down to the heel, which is, look, Ophir, the foot of the soul. So we got the foot of the soul, the heel of the soul. And as it is in this attribute wisdom, which is the letter yud, and so that is the quality of wisdom that is in everything. And that's really the idea of Jacob drawing that yud down into the lowest level, into the heel, until it comes down into the foot, which is in the soul. And through the descent of the soul below, it goes to Choron, to this realm of anger and difficulty. And after that, it comes to the realm of separation. But we do this because what we're doing is bringing the Yud to the Akev, to the heel. We're connecting them together. And about this, it says, Jacob went out of Beersheba, and this causes a tremendous, there's a movement, a shift, which is taking place. And Beersheba, that the well of seven, that means the seven emotional attributes of the person. And that is a phenomenal thing. Well, I think that's, it's actually a very long discourse. And it makes the point that, you know, whatever we're learning about this, it's all things happening inside each one of us.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a very powerful teaching for us to have shared together.
I'm glad we got off on the right foot.
It's a joke.
Boy, okay. Depends on your sense of humor. Hashem definitely has one.
Yeah. Okay, guys. All the very best. Lovely seeing you.
Thank you, Rebbe.
Yeah. And thank you
so much.
Yeah.
Next week.
Marvelous.
Thanks for explaining it, taking time.